WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Actress Annabella Sciorra is best known for her starring roles in the comedy True Love, the Spike Lee film Jungle Fever, and the hit thriller The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Earlier this year, she starred opposite Eric Stoltz in the romantic comedy Mr. Jealousy, in which she played an art historian. Here she is conducting a museum tour.
Personage is a very good example of his fascination with not just the human body, but the terror and the loneliness of the human condition.
The figure is almost faceless. All you can see are the eyes and the mouth.
She's right. All I can see are the eyes and the mouth.
The eyes and the mouth, except for I personally think that that's an ear, but, you know, I've been told that it's not an ear, so I guess everybody else is right. But I think, doesn't it look like an ear? It looks like an ear.
Annabella Sciorra is now starring opposite Robin Williams in the film What Dreams May Come. The movie is set in heaven and hell as well as on earth. Annabella Sciorra loses her children in a car accident, then loses her husband in another one. Her husband and children go to heaven, leaving her to grieve alone on earth. In fact, she's in tears for much of the film. I asked Sciorra if she had to summon up tears for these scenes, if she was ever able to rely on artificial ones.
You know, I don't ever obligate myself to have tears or to have laughter or to have any of the final emotion or product that you see. It was a set where it was very open. There were a lot of takes that instead of crying, I am laughing or, you know, or in shock or, you know, something else is going on. And it was just a matter of the director deciding which way he wanted to go with all of that. I think that there are times... You can fake stuff, you know, you can fake, you know, stuff if the director wants something, it's really not the way you naturally want to go. But on this movie, I think we had a lot of freedom to just stay in the moment and stay with what was going on.
Annabella Sciorra, I know you were born in Connecticut, and then I think you moved to New York when you were how old?
11.
11. Did you think of yourself as having a New York accent as you were growing up?
I did have a slight accent during a certain period of my life, in order to fit in, I think, with the people I was going to school with.
Is that something that you then had to try to lose for some roles and then play up for other roles?
Yeah, I was very fortunate to find a dialect coach when I was 16 or 17, I think. Her name was Deborah Ross Sullivan, and she was actually from the Bronx, and she studied with a woman named Edith Skinner. And she taught me that having a New York accent wasn't the coolest thing in the world, and I could afford losing it. And if I wanted it back, I could get it back.
I have a question about your voice. Now, in your movies, you've had many roles where you've had to use your voice very forcefully. I mean, from one of your earliest roles in True Love, where you play, you know, a bride, to even in Mr. Jealousy, I mean, you're very assertive in that, and you're speaking in a very small voice right now, which is different from the voice I'm used to on screen.
Yeah,
it seems much more tentative to me.
I think that I think it's one of the reasons I thought acting was so interesting is because I grew up very shy and very tentative, and I always felt like the roles I was playing and what came out of me while I was acting was always much more interesting than who I was. I felt like I had a much larger landscape of life in my acting than I did in my real life, and I tend not to be that loud or forceful in my real life.
Mm-hmm. I think the first role that a lot of people noticed you in was in True Love, which was Nancy Savoca's first film, the first film she directed. And you play, you know, a bride, you know, a woman getting married. You're from the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and your husband to be is acting a little dumb and reluctant about the whole thing. How did you get the part?
There's two stories about how it happened, and I don't really remember which is true, but I'm pretty sure that I got a call from a casting director named Todd Thaler, who had my picture and resume for one reason or another, and he was casting the movie. And I was supposed to go in and audition, and I couldn't make it because I was working as a bartender at the time. And I think I missed about three of those auditions, and then finally did make it in one afternoon, and I auditioned for Nancy and her husband Rich, who was the producer, and they co-wrote the film by doing a monologue that I had written.
Do you remember the monologue, and would you do a few lines from it?
I can remember the first line because I remember the first line was I'm Italian, right? And I remember that because when I said it, Nancy said, yeah. And I said, no, I just started the monologue. And that's why I remember that very first line. But, it was like, I'm Italian, right? So things are either good or they're bad. There's no in between. It started like that. She was trying to explain to somebody. She was being asked out on a date, and her boyfriend just broke up with her, and she was trying to explain, like, who she was and set this guy up about, you know, what he was in for.
Now, was that voice similar to the voice that you had before losing your New York accent, or is that just something that you got for the movie? Because it's very, very convincing.
I think it's not really what I had. I think it's a much more Italian, American, New York accent, mm-hmm. which is more down here. You know, it's more that. Mm. A lot of, you know, they use a lot of D's, you know, in place of T's. It wasn't exactly what I had because I didn't grow up with that many Italian Americans, but I think that's what I tried to give Donna as well.
And then you were in Spike Lee's Jungle Fever, which you played opposite Wesley Snipes. He was an architect, and you're having a relationship that is frowned on by friends and family on both sides because it's interracial. I'm wondering if there was a lot of discussion about that on the set, about, you know, interracial relationships.
I guess there was, yeah. I think it was talked about a lot. I think that there were people on that set who thought that it wasn't good. It wasn't a good thing. That people should stay with their own kind, were the words that were used. I think even Spike at the time, from what I remember, he did not think it was good for that to happen. To me, it wasn't anything that unusual from the world I grew up in, and I didn't really find it that shocking or different. I think also I saw it as a love story. I didn't really see it as much as this curiosity relationship about what is black like, what is white like, which I think is more how Spike saw it. So at the time, I think we disagreed a little bit about that, but there were many creative discussions, you know, that revolved around that.
Now, what happens in a movie where the director feels that the character is having this relationship just to kind of try out a new flavor, so to speak, but you, the actor, thinks, no, this is more serious. She feels for the person. It's not a novelty. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just... It's a real relationship. Who wins? I mean, do you win because you're the actress and you're finally doing it, or does the director win because he insists on a certain performance and chooses the take that's closest to what he wants?
Well, the director wins because the director is the boss, and you know it's an actor's job to fulfill his wishes. Really, I mean, that's your job. If you really have such a huge disagreement about what's going on and what the story is, then you really shouldn't work in the movie, and you know it should be recognized in, beforehand, so you don't get into a really bad situation working on a movie where you're trying to make two different movies. I think that Unfortunately, I think with Spike, I don't think that we understood each other before the movie started, so I think we did get into some situations where we disagreed about stuff. But I think ultimately, when I look at that movie, I think Spike really gave me my moments. I think he understood what I was doing, and, you know, ultimately, he could have made it into something else. He could have cut a lot of it out. He could have dropped a lot of those moments, and I think ultimately he gave me my moments, and everything that I wanted that character to be is in that movie. So I think it worked out for both of us.
My guest is Annabella Sciorra. She stars in the new film, What Dreams May Come. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Annabella Sciorra. She stars in the new film, What Dreams May Come. The Hand That Rocks the Cradle was a huge commercial success and started this whole trend of movies that were trying to capitalize on the suspense theme in that, and that you play a young mother who hires the babysitter from hell who, mm-hmm. you know, takes over and totally, you know, tries to ruin the family. Did you have any idea it would be such a big hit, or did you just think it would be, you know, another thriller?
No, I had no idea it would be a big hit. I think that there were days on the set that I would laugh so hard because I thought it was just the stupidest thing I was ever going to be in. But I think, to the director's credit, Curtis Hanson and John Link, who's the editor on the movie, and the producers, John Madden, I think that they turned it into a really great movie of that genre. And I came to appreciate that type of movie, I think.
So it's possible to make a movie and not be aware of how good or bad it is as you're making it?
I don't think you ever can. No, because I've been on movies that I thought were just going to be so amazing and really turned out to me to be disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Or not only disappointing, but different from the movie I thought I was in.
Can you think of an example?
Well, let's see. I did a movie called Whispers in the Dark that I thought was a really, really interesting psychological thriller when I read it for the first time. And I did not like the movie at all. I don't think I liked one moment of the movie. I thought it was trash. I think if I were the producer, he's a great producer, and he's made great movies in his career. But I would have done something else with it, I think.
So now you've also done a couple of movies with Abel Ferrara, who does a lot of speaking of perverse. I mean, he does a lot of very strange independent films, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering what his approach to directing is.
He's got a
he did The Bad Lieutenant and The Addiction,
right.
The Funeral.
He did The Addiction and The Funeral, and he's done a lot of great movies. You've got to like working with him to work with him, because it's the set is extremely creative but extremely chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very into it. I really like being on his sets. In fact, I've said this before and it's still true. There's nothing I wouldn't do with Abel. You know, he could ask me to stand in my head and do a scene and I would do it.
Why? What is it about him that would
I just
get
trust
you to follow
him? I trust him. I trust his instincts. Because he has a lot of respect for the people that he works with, which is why he has been working with the same cinematographer for 18 years. And, you know, he works with the same production designer and costume designer and the same actors over and over again, because there's a real respect, a real mutual respect for what's going on and people's processes. And, I look forward to working with him again. We talk about it, and we might do something this winter together.
Can you put your finger on what else differentiates a good director for actors from a bad or mediocre one?
I think that the respect factor is important. You sometimes take for granted that when a director hires actors, he actually respects what they do and trusts their acting. But quite often that doesn't happen. And so they're not only telling you what they want in the scene, but they're also trying to tell you how to act, and they're trying to tell you how to get there, which is very frustrating, because you can't take an actor who knows the way that they work and try to change it. And if there's no respect, and if that's missing, and if there's no trust, then you also aren't free to really talk about what you're doing, because it's not really important. And again, you don't need to talk about what you're doing, but, I mean, a director is there to direct you, and you need that guidance. You want that guidance as an actor, because you can't watch yourself and act at the same time.
So it sounds like what you want from a director is a sense of feedback, maybe, but not advice on how to get from here to there in a role, not an advice on how to get to the point of embodying the character, because that's a very personal...
Yeah, it's very personal, and a lot of times in sets you have, you know, directors do this, what I call method directing,
mm-hmm.
and they like to, you know, push actors emotionally into a situation.
Like how?
Oh, I've seen them do it all, I've seen it so many times, I've seen directors yell at actors to get them to cry or to intimidate them, and... people, you know, I've even heard stories of Ilya Kazan doing it with a face in the crowd, and it's just infuriating to me. It's really disrespectful.
As if, like, you didn't have the technique to get there through your own technique.
Right, yeah, and if you don't have the technique, then why did you hire me, you know? Mm-hmm. Why do you hire somebody if you don't respect or trust what they're going to do? So it starts off in a bad place, I think, when it starts off like that.
Has someone ever tried to do that to you on the set? Try to, like, humiliate you so you look humiliated on screen for a scene?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you realize what was happening as it was happening?
Yes. It doesn't really work with me because I get really pissed off.
So is that what you did? You just got angry?
yeah, because it takes you out. For me, it takes me out of what I'm doing, you know. They may as well be talking about, you know, Chinese food while I'm trying to act. If they start doing that, it's annoying.
So how is it resolved?
And distracting. How is it resolved? Well, it's a delicate situation, because if you come right out and tell them that what they're doing is annoying, then they're going to be hurt and insulted and realize that maybe they don't know how to direct. And so you have to be very delicate about it. And, you know, politely, you know, tell them that, you know, it takes you, that, you know, if they're going to behave like that, then you have to sort of pretend that you're in that same world with them and say that, you know, maybe it takes you out of the moment if they talk while you're acting or something like that.
Now, it seems to me that you're an actress who has come up pretty independently. Some actors and actresses start in a group of people who are associated with a certain period or era or type of film or repertory company or something, and they seem to, like, move together for the first 3 years of their career. Mm. You never had that, for better or worse.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, I didn't. I was never really part of a group like that.
It sounds like it's probably in your nature to not be part of a group like that.
I think it is, too. It's something that I always found attractive, but from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was... because I was shy and because it was hard for me to be around that many people and it was hard for me to be part of a group. I was also always very secretive about my work, even. It was always very hard for me to talk about my work. I didn't understand how people sat around and talked about their work. It just was so stupid to me, you know?
Let me ask you, since there does seem to be such a contrast between who you are as yourself and who you are in character, and that you're much more, you know, withdrawn and just the observer as yourself. Do you ever walk in for an audition or after you've gotten the part and find that the casting director or the film director thinks, like, oh, well, no, they can't possibly do this. Look how quiet, look how small they seem in real life. They can't play this character. I've made a terrible mistake, or I can't possibly give her the role in spite of what I've seen from other performances.
I think it does happen. I mean, I feel like it's happened, and I also feel, starting, you would go into a situation and you would audition to get a role, and then as you start, your work starts to get known, you come in to just to have a meeting with the director, and that was always very uncomfortable to me because, or you have a meeting and then an audition, you know, it would be different than it was before, because coming in to audition, you can pretty much just give them what they want. And I think that it's more comfortable for everybody for them just to think that you possess those qualities naturally, rather than to come in and talk intellectually about a character, to talk as yourself. It shows them a part of you that they, you know, maybe don't really want to see in the character. And there's they're obviously going to see it. You know, they're going to see it. It's going to affect how they see you and how they see you as the character.
So how do you respond to those kinds of auditions where a lot of the audition is just speaking about the role with the director?
It's tricky. I mean, it's very tricky. It's I'm not very good at it. I don't feel very comfortable with it. I still would rather audition.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather come in and just if it's a situation where we don't know yet, like if it's not an offer and we're, you know, it's in the talking stages of, do I want to do this? Do they want me to do it? It's easier for me to just come in and do it and say, look, you know, this is kind of how I see the role right now. You know, obviously there's a lot of changes and things, and but here's a part of me that I think I would like to express in this role, and even that can be tricky because sometimes you see it a certain way right now, but it's not necessarily how you would play it in 2 months or 6 months. So you're also trying to negotiate that. You know, it's altogether, it would be just much better if I was in a theater company.
Annabella Sciorra, she stars in the new film, What Dreams May Come. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.